Right, welcome to another deep dive here. Today we're looking at a pretty significant case when it comes to student speech and where the boundaries are, especially for students. It's Castro v. Clovis Unified School District. We've got all the case documents and summaries right here in front of us. And well, our mission today is to really, dig into this case and try to understand the core legal principles here, right? We'll try to unpack what this means for schools, especially how they handle student speech, right? It's tricky.
Yeah, it's a really interesting case. It really highlights the tension, I think, that courts are facing when they apply First Amendment law, which is, pretty well established, to these new situations and challenges that come up in the digital world, especially when it comes to schools. And, where's the line? Where do students' rights end? And where does the school's responsibility to keep things safe and orderly, where does that begin?
Right, exactly. And, right at the center of this whole thing is a high school senior named Andy Castro. And it all comes down to a tweet he sent out on, get this, his graduation day. And this is important for you to understand. This wasn't just some random off-campus comment or something. This happened right there on school grounds during school hours. Graduation day, literally. He tweets out a picture of an African-American classmate with a, a really, really bad racial slur. We're talking the N-word here.
Yeah. It's a really key point that this wasn't a private message or anything like that. This was a public tweet directed at a classmate. And like you said, the timing and location are huge here, on campus, during school time. And that's going to play a big role later on in how the court looks at this whole thing.
Exactly. And of course, this didn't just go unnoticed. Another student saw the tweet, obviously very upset by it, and reported it to Principal Stephanie Hanks. And it's interesting because this whole act of reporting, it becomes a pretty significant detail when we look at the court's reasoning later on.
For sure. It's important for you to kind of see how this, it's not just the one student targeted by the slur that's impacted your right. Like, it ripples out and affects others who see it, learn about it. It really does potentially impact the whole environment at the school.
Right. So Principal Hanks, she meets with Castro and his parents, and he did get his diploma, so he officially graduated. But he was told that he wouldn't be allowed to participate in the actual graduation ceremony, the big celebration part, because of the tweet. It was a direct consequence of what he did that day.
And what's kind of fascinating for you, the listener, is that the school very intentionally made a distinction between the diploma itself, which is like, you completed the requirements, you graduated, versus the actual ceremony, which is more symbolic, right? It's about celebrating the community and, the values of the school.
Absolutely. And, to make matters worse, it doesn't end there.
Yeah.
Castro then sends out more tweets, this time mocking the student who reported the first offensive post. So you can imagine that probably didn't help his case at all.
Those extra tweets are really telling. It sort of shows for you, a lack of taking responsibility for his actions and just like continuing that harmful behavior, And it all stems from that initial thing he did right there on campus.
Okay, so now you've got the whole timeline, right? There's the tweet, there's the report, the school takes action, and then we have even more online stuff happening. So let's get to the heart of this legally speaking. What were the big legal issues the court had to think about here?
Well, the main legal questions, when you look at the Constitution, really boil down to this. Did the school violate Castro's First Amendment rights, the freedom of speech, by stopping him from being in the graduation ceremony? And then did they violate his 14th Amendment rights, due process, by how they handled the whole disciplinary thing?
And how did Castro even bring this case to court? What was the process there?
Well, he actually started out by suing the school district himself, representing himself, which in legal terms we call pro se. It's a pretty big deal to take on a whole school district in a constitutional case without a lawyer. And he was going for a lot of money in damages, like something like $10 million from what I remember.
Wow. That really gives you an idea of how serious this was from Castro's point of view. What happened in the early stages of the case?
So some of his initial legal arguments were tossed out pretty early on. Then the case went to what we call summary judgment. This is where the court basically says, look, there are no real disagreements about the facts of the case. And, based on the law, one side wins. In May of 2022, the court granted summary judgment to the school district. Basically, they sided with the school.
The school won. So to really break down why they won, we have to get into the First Amendment stuff. And this means going back to a landmark Supreme Court case that basically sets the rules for student speech. Tinker v. Des Moines, back in 1969.
Right. Tinker v. Des Moines is like the gold standard here. You know, the case was about these students who wore black armbands to school to protest the Vietnam War. And the Supreme Court had to figure out, like, how much could schools restrict this kind of symbolic speech?
So what's the main thing that Tinker said about student-free speech in schools? Like, what's the takeaway for you?
The key is what we call the Tinker Standard. Basically, it says that schools can regulate student speech if it causes a substantial disruption to the school environment or if it invades the rights of others. So if the speech doesn't do either of those things, it's generally protected by the First Amendment, even if it's happening at school. This was the Supreme Court trying to balance things out.
Okay, so in this Castro case, how did the court apply the Tinker Standard to a situation with an online racial slur? Did they decide that Castro's tweet caused a substantial disruption?
Interestingly, the Castro court said that there wasn't enough evidence to say for sure that the tweet caused a substantial disruption. Like, in the traditional sense, you know, like if everyone started freaking out or there were protests or it messed up classes big time, the tweet was obviously super offensive and upsetting, but it didn't lead to total chaos or anything at the graduation.
So you see, it wasn't like the school could punish Castro simply because the tweet stopped everyone from having a normal graduation day. There had to be something more to it than that. So they had to look at the other part of the Tinker test.
Exactly. The court really zeroed in on that second part of Tinker. The invasion of the rights of others. They said that using a racial slur, specifically targeting an African-American classmate like that, caused direct harm to that student.
And it wasn't only the targeted student, right? The court also thought about the student who reported the tweet. Why is that important for you to understand?
Right. They made a point of saying that students have a right not to be subjected to online posts that are racist and that they should be able to be at school and feel safe and secure. They said that Castro's racial slur, especially since it was aimed at a specific person and it happened on school grounds on graduation day, violated that student's right to be in a respectful and safe learning environment. And on top of that, the student who reported the tweet was also distressed by it, you know? So that was considered part of the invasion of rights, too. It shows you the bigger impact that kind of speech can have.
So basically, this case kind of expands the idea of invasion of rights. It's not only about physical threats or bullying, but it includes the right not to be targeted with racial harassment, because that can totally ruin a safe learning environment.
Absolutely. And they even said, and I'm quoting here, students have the right to be free of online posts that denigrate their race and to enjoy a civil, secure school environment. That pretty much sums up their whole reasoning, you know? Schools have to protect these rights.
Yeah, it really emphasizes that schools aren't just about academics. They're responsible for making sure everyone feels safe and respected. The court also mentioned something about where the speech actually happened, right?
Mm.
The fact that the tweet was sent from school grounds seemed to be really important. Why is that important for you to understand?
This is huge. The court said that the outcome might have been different if the tweet came from off campus. You know, if Castro sent it from his house on a Saturday or something, they implied that when it comes to off-campus speech, there are different legal things to think about. It would probably be harder for the school to intervene, like in that Mahanoy case, which we can talk about later, maybe.
So the fact that it happened on school grounds was key. It meant that the school had the power to discipline him because of that invasion of rights idea from Tinker. All right, let's talk about Castro's argument that his due process rights were violated, that he didn't get enough notice and wasn't given a fair chance to tell his side of the story. How did the court deal with that? What do you think is the key takeaway for the listener here?
Well, the court said that the school actually did give Castro enough due process in this situation. They pointed out that he knew about the accusations against him, you know, and he and his parents had a meeting with the principal, and they talked about it. It wasn't a formal hearing or anything, but it did give him a chance to explain himself.
So he knew why they were disciplining him,
mm-hmm.
and he had a chance to respond, even if it wasn't a full-blown legal process, right? That's what you should understand.
Right. And they also mentioned that the school had policies in place that said harmful speech could lead to discipline, including not being in the graduation ceremony. So in a way, he already knew there could be consequences for that kind of behavior. The level of due process needed in a school situation isn't as strict as, say, in a criminal case.
I also noticed that Castro made claims under the California Constitution and the state's education code, not just the federal stuff. What happened with those?
The court basically rejected those state law claims. They did it for the same reasons they rejected the federal First Amendment claim. They said the school was justified because they had to protect students and make sure everyone had a fair chance at school. These principles, they said, applied to the state law arguments as well.
All right, so stepping back and looking at the bigger picture here, what are the really important things we can learn from this ruling in Castro v. Clovis Unified School District? What does it tell us about how much power schools have, and what are the limits on what students can say, particularly online, at school? What should listeners really remember from this case?
The main takeaway for you, really, is that this decision shows how much power schools have to deal with speech on campus that targets and harms marginalized students. The court really leaned hard on that invasion of rights part of the Tinker standard, especially because this was about an online post with a racial slur. It's a pretty clear message. Schools don't have to wait until things get completely out of control to step in if there's that kind of harmful and discriminatory speech happening on their property.
That's a powerful message, you know, especially today when students are interacting online so much, even if it's connected to school. For the future lawyers out there listening who might end up advising schools, what practical things can they learn from this case?
I think it really highlights how important it is for schools to have clear, well-written policies about student speech.
Right.
Especially when it comes to harassment, discrimination, and, you know, cyberbullying. And they need to enforce these policies consistently. It also shows how vital it is to document, like, really thoroughly the specific harm caused to other students when a school is thinking about taking disciplinary action for offensive speech. This documentation can make a huge difference if the school ends up in court, you know, defending their decision.
Okay, and what about for the students themselves? As they're trying to figure out this whole world of online communication and free speech, what should they take away from Castro?
Well, the key thing for students to understand is that, yeah, they have free speech rights, but they're not absolute, especially not at school. Speech that happens on campus, and that now includes online speech that starts there. You know, if it targets and puts down other people, it's way more likely to get you in trouble than speech that happens completely off campus and doesn't directly affect the school. The internet might make things blurry, but when speech starts on school grounds, the school has a lot more power to do something about it.
The court also talked about how students have a right to be secure and left alone at school. That sounds like a really important principle for this whole decision.
Yeah, totally. That idea that students should have a right to feel secure and left alone, it really forms the basis for how the court thinks about invasion of rights. Mm-hmm. It underscores that schools have a duty to create an environment where every student feels safe, respected, and like they're not going to be harassed. And this right also protects students from offensive online posts, even if they start on campus, you know, that disrupt that sense of security.
And just to make the difference between on-campus and off-campus speech super clear, we should mention Mahanoy VBL, that case from 2021. The Supreme Court sided with the student there whose off-campus Snapchat post got her in trouble at school. What does this tell you?
It's a great comparison case. In Mahanoy, the Supreme Court was pretty clear that schools don't have as much of a right to regulate speech that happens completely off school grounds and not as part of school activities either. The Castro case really highlights that difference because it focuses so much on the fact that the tweet happened on campus during school hours. It shows that the location and timing of the speech matter a lot.
So the big takeaway here for you is that schools do have the authority to discipline students for things they say on campus, even online. This is especially true if it violates the rights of others, like when it comes to racial slurs and targeted harassment that disrupt the learning environment.
Exactly. Castro v. Clovis Unified School District is a perfect example of how the Tinker Standard is still important in the digital age. It reaffirms that schools can and should protect students from harmful and discriminatory actions, even online, that happen in the school setting.
This deep dive into Castro v. Clovis Unified School District has been really eye-opening. It definitely shows that it's tough to balance students' rights to free speech with schools' responsibility to make sure everyone is safe and respected. And it leads us to our final thought for you, our listeners. Think about how the lines between online and offline communication are getting blurrier and how that's changing how we understand First Amendment rights in schools. What does this mean for schools as they try to navigate student speech in this ever-changing digital world? Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive.